Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 778, is Ekapat. Prior to this, we had several names involving the term Chatur, meaning four, and those names are over now, and we move on to Ekapat. Eka means one. And Pada, from which comes Pat, means one-fourth of anything, or to the feet. We very well know the term Pada in terms of feet, as in, for instance, Prabhupada, one who is at the feet of the Prabhu, the Supreme Lord, or at whose feet there are so many Prabhus, there are so many Vaishnavas. And the term can be used to mean also just like a part of something, a fraction of something. The first meaning given by Parashara Bhatta is he who manifests only a part of his glory when he descends among humans. Now, you may remember recently in the discussion of the names beginning with Chatur, in the discussion of Chatur Vyuha, there was a discussion of the Pancharatric description of the Supreme Lord as Para, his original complete form in the spiritual world, and then Vyuha, Vibhav, Antaryami, and Archa. So the idea is that in the spiritual world, he manifests his full glory, and when he expands himself as the Vyuha, when he enters this world in his Vibhav form, Antaryami form, or Archa form, his full glory is not manifest. And this, of course, we find also in the Gaudiya understanding of the Supreme, even Krishna, Purna Purushottam Bhagavan, the Supreme Complete Personality of Godhead, he doesn't show all his power. He deliberately limits that. Otherwise, how could he act? How could he have pastimes? How could he act in this world if there wouldn't be any fun? He's a fun-loving God. There wouldn't be any fun if Lord Brahma calling here, Bhagavan. Namaskar. Now we're having a problem with this Ravana. Okay, psh! Just by the thought, by the Icha Shakti of the Supreme Lord, Ravana is blasted into nothingness. And then there's no Ramayana, there's no Ram Leela. So he comes in some ways as if he was an ordinary person. But then he shows his transcendental magnificence, but still only a little bit. And actually, his glory is immeasurable. Even if we take the original form of in the spiritual world, who can know, who can measure the extent of his glory? But still, the point is made that when he appears in this world, he is full in all opulences, but he doesn't manifest them all. There are some references given by this, given about this in Ramayana. When Lord Ram is being told, actually, you're Bhagawan. He's told by Vishwamitra and others. Vishwamitra, who, even though he knows he's the Supreme Lord, acts as his guru. So Ram in reply says, Aham manusham manye. I'm a man. I consider myself a man. I'm the son of Dasharath, right? Everyone knows I'm the son of Dasharath. That's how I identify myself. But for when he says that, that's not like us. When we, that's not Dehatma Buddhi, the conditioned soul thinking, I am this body. When Ram thinks I am this body, he's not in Maya, because he is. When I think I am this body, I am in Maya because I'm not this body. So there is a difference. It's the Lord's Yoga Maya potency by which he voluntarily submits himself to for the sake of enjoying loving pastimes. And that example can be given. I've given that many times, heard it from Srila Prabhupada of Gladstone, a one-time Prime Minister of Great Britain at the height of her glory in the Victorian era, voluntarily becoming a, pretending to be a horse to enjoy some pleasure with one of his grandchildren. Here's another reference that Parashara Bhatta gives from Vishnu Purana in relation to Lord Krishna appearing in this world. Angshavataro Brahmarshi Yo yam yadu kolod bhavaha. O Brahmarshi, this avatar of the Lord, Krishna, in the Yadu race, is only a small part of himself. Actually, Lord Krishna, when he appears, all the avatars appear with him. That's discussed near the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. But still, Vishnu Purana says like this, that in the we can understand it in this. Actually, Angsha Avatar means those who only, from the Gaurya Vaishnava terminology, as we find in Laghu Bhagavatamrita of Rupa Goswami and elsewhere, the Angsha Avatar means they only manifest certain opulences of the Supreme Lord. And there will be most of them, Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, as Krishna shows them all. But still, it's only partial. It's, when lifting Govardhan Hill becomes advertised as a tremendous feat, oh, Krishna, Giridhari, but he's holding up millions and billions and trillions and zillions of universes. And what is a big thing for him to hold up a hill? But it seems like a very noteworthy matter because Krishna appears to be a child. Quoting from Vishnu Purana, similar statement. Angshang shena avatirya urvyam. He has come into this world only with a part, showing only a part of himself. And of course, Krishna himself says that in Gita. Tatadeva avagachatvam mama viryangsa sambhavam. Mama tejangsa sambhavam. That all that you see in this, all this glory is only a small part of myself. All the glorious things of this world. Yad yad vibhuti mat sarvam srimad urjitam eva va. So Krishna, he is the Supreme Lord, but he only manifests a little bit of his glory. And right after that statement, which I just quoted from Gita, I'm getting a little muddled up in quoting it, that comes at the end of the 10th chapter. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna says, well, okay, that's just a little of your glories. How about showing me all of it, all at once? Everything in the material world. And then there's the universal form. But then the Gaurya Vaishnava commentators understand that Krishna shows the universal form. Then Arjuna has to see his four-handed form. And then his original Soumya Vapu, his very dear and pleasing form, two-handed form. So in one sense, the universal form with all the majesty, that's showing the full extent of the Lord's glories, at least as manifested in this world, with thousands of faces and thousands of helmets and thousands of weapons, fire blazing from the mouths and the warriors entering into the mouths. But that is understood because Krishna then, okay, he withdraws that and again shows his original form. So the when we say that Krishna only manifests partially, what does that mean to us? When he's so powerful, he can show the universal form at every moment, but he doesn't. He acts as the charioteer of Arjuna, taking a very humble position, although everyone knew who he was. It's just to give a mundane example, if the prime minister or president of a powerful nation, just at some point, he happens to visit a children's school and takes part in a children's game with them. He might appear to be just like playing like a child, but everyone knows he's the president of the country. He's just doing that to be nice to the children. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord shows a little of himself when he comes. Here's a quote from Balakanda of Sri Ramayana. Now we've heard that the payasam, the sweet rice, for in the Putra Karmeshti Yajna, in which Dasharath was the yajaman, that was divided. And Kaushalya took a certain amount, half, and then she took half, and then Sumitra took some part, and then Kaikeyi took some part, and then Sumitra took another part. And in this way, according to the amount they took, the avatars who appeared from them manifested a certain amount of the potency of the Supreme Lord. So it's mentioned in Balakanda, Vishnur Adham Mahabhagam Putram Ikshvaku Nandanam. Rama, the delight of Ikshvaku and all in the dynasty of Ikshvaku, took birth as half of the Ansha of Vishnu, a half part of Vishnu. What exactly does that mean when the Supreme Lord is unlimited? If you say half of unlimited, that's also unlimited. But it suggests, again, that he's not showing the full potency of himself. Shankaracharya gives another understanding that his manifestation in the form of this universe is only one-fourth of himself. And here we have Ekapad. This whole material manifestation, all the universe is put together, is Ekapad Vibhuti, or one-fourth of the opulence of the Lord. And Tripad is the spiritual world. We already had the name Tripad way back in Vishnu Sahasranam. Shankaracharya quotes from Purusha Sukta in this regard. It's also in various Puranas. It's stated in Bhagavat Purana. I'll quote that just now. But Shankara also quotes what I quoted from the same section of Gita. Shankaracharya in this regard quotes from the end of the 10th chapter, another verse. Exactly the word Ansha is used. One part, Ekangsha, is used in this Gita verse, which is very similar to saying Ekapat. Remember the name we're speaking on is Ekapat. So Shankara quotes, Atava bahunanena kingyatena bhavarjuna vishtabhyam idam kritsnam ekangshena stito jagat. But what of use to all is all of you, What use to you is all this extensive knowledge I'm giving, all this? With just a little part of my power, I sustain the whole universe. Just with a little part of myself. Akanksha. So we can say, scientists are discovering so many things. We can say, what is the use? Or, what is the use of studying or finding out so many things? Just understand that all of this put together is just a tiny part of the opulence of the spiritual, of Krishna. So why not find out Krishna? That would be a better scientific endeavor. Instead of being fascinated by this material world, trying to find out so many things, you just find out these two things. You take it from Bhagavad Gita. But material world means dukkhalayam, a place of misery, and ashashvatam. Everything here is temporary. Understand these two things and search out Krishna. That place, prastasmatubhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha. This material world is sometimes manifested, sometimes not manifested, but there is a place beyond that. That is yadgatvana nivartante. When you go there, you don't come back. Tadhama paramamama. That is the place of Krishna. So that's vijnana. Vijnana is this Sanskrit word which is used in modern Indian languages to mean science. But the original usage of the word means to find out that knowledge beyond the mundane. Paravidya and aparavidya. Knowledge of the supreme and knowledge of the non-supreme. Yes, so about this three parts of the Lord's opulences manifest the spiritual world, and one part manifests the material world. I'll quote now from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Text 20. Padas trayo bahishchasan aprajanam yaashramaha antas trilokastvaparo grihamedho brihadrataha. The spiritual world, which consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world and is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family life and do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the three material worlds. So ekapat means one part, the material world, but that's also divided into three. After all, it's a part, but it's a huge part, so it's divided into three, the upper, lower, and middle worlds. And then again, sometimes it's divided into 14. So there's an instance where this is discussed, and Srila Prabhupada in that particular purport is very, very strong purport for those who are attached to family life and sex life, how they have to remain within this material world. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan, he gives this meaning also about the one portion. One portion of his greatness is the material manifestation consisting of innumerable universes. And in this regard, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes from the Shruti, Rig Veda, no less. Padosya Vishvabhutani, all created beings comprise one quarter of the Supreme Person's greatness. Padosya, this material universe with all the living beings in it. Also quoting from the Smriti from Vishnu Purana. This is also Baladev Vidyabhushan. Andanang tu sahasranang sahasranyu sahasran sahasranya yutani cha tadrishanang tata tatra koti koti shatani cha. Sahasra means thousands, koti means a crore, which is 10 million, and ayut means more than that. It's the next figure up. So you could, just to put it in some kind of English terminology, there are thousands, millions, and trillions of such material universes, and they're all within Ekapat, the Supreme Lord, the one part of the four parts of his total opulence. So, there you go, all the thousands, how many? Thousands, millions, trillions, zillions. How many universes are there? But it's all just within Ekangshena Stito Jagat, with just a little of my power, Krishna says. It's just a tiny part of him. It's the material world. It's not the real place to be. And even if we all these tremendous universes with all these tremendous personalities within them, all of it put together is nothing compared to him. That is the point. Krishna is so great. And so another meaning then, coming to another meaning, foot. From the Vedas again, Shruti, Taittiriya Aranyaka. All beings are his foot. The original is not given, the Sanskrit is not given. So literally, Ekapat means someone who has, it means one foot. One foot. What is it? Bhavanadev! You see one foot here, and one foot, whoa, only one foot on the ground, and one foot beyond, going beyond vision from this earth. Just going up and up and up and up and up. So on one single foot, one foot was on the ground, and with one foot he measured his one step, the whole universe. One step. Small step for man and a big step for mankind. So Vishnu doesn't do any, when he wants to step out, he does so in a big way. And of course, although the name, he has the name Tripad, which can literally mean 3 feet, or Ekapat, which means one foot. He has 2 feet. Actually, he has 2 feet. In his Somyavapu, his form, two-handed form, in his four-handed form, in his six-handed form, he may have many, many arms, but we see him with 2 legs, 2 feet, and his feet are so glorious, worshipable, beautiful, attractive. We approach Krishna from his feet. We don't jump up to his smiling face. We, as humble servants, we approach from his feet. When I was preparing a talk on the name in Vishnu Sahasranam, Padamanuttamam, I saw that none of the commentators had interpreted Padam as foot. In Sanskrit and other languages like Bengali and Hindi, both Pada and Pada have foot as the main meaning. So I thought I'd speak a little bit about the 2 feet of the Supreme Lord. There are a couple, this discussion could go on forever. Those feet, they're sought after by great yogis. Pantastu koti shata vatsara sampragamyo vayora tapi Munipungava atava munipungavanam sopyasti yat prabhada simya vinchintya tatve govindavadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The great yogi is drilling the respiration, might reach somewhere near the area of his lotus feet after great endeavors in yogic practice over many, many lives. Such are the glories of the lotus feet of Govinda Mahadi Purusham, Govinda, the original personality of Godhead. And if we reach the lotus feet, actually, then as we go up in the rasas, we wonder if we reach to Sakya Ras, and when we go up to Vatsalya Ras and Madhurya Ras, we want to see the face of Krishna, kiss the face of Krishna in Sakya Ras. The coward boys, they may not kiss him so much, they may embrace him. Parents, they'll kiss. Lovers, they'll kiss. But we begin at the feet, and it's quite easy to get infatuated by the feet. And Dasya Ras itself is so rich and so full and so rewarding, and the lotus feet of Krishna, which the servants serve, there's such a taste from doing so, and we could stay on the feet forever, and many do. The Vaishnavas in the Madhva Sampradaya, Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, in the mood of service. Very good, that's it, service. But eho, age kohoa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't reject the notion of basic service, as he not exactly rejected. Well, he didn't take it as the essence. When Ramananda Rai spoke to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about Kama Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya Age Kohoa. But when Ramananda Rai came to the point of devotional service, beginning with Shravanadi Kirtan, Shravanadi Bhakti, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Ehohoi, that's it, Age Kohoa, say something more. There's so much to be said, even just at the feet. So, and it's not that if we get, okay, now I'm going to become a gopi, it's nothing to do. No, the gopis are also very interested in the lotus feet of Krishna. They think of his feet a lot when he goes out. In the forest of Vrindavan, we see right after the Gopi Gita, the first verse in the next chapter, there, lamenting the gopis that, oh, he's going out in the forests of Vrindavan barefoot, and surely Kurpadi, the little stones and gravel will prick his feet. We're afraid to put his feet on our breasts because we're thinking it's so hard, it'll hurt. It should be very, very soft. But then he has to go in the stones and gravel. So they're very concerned with his feet. So, little bit, there are so many ways we could discuss the feet of the Supreme Lord. I'm just going to speak a little bit about one composition very famous among the Sri Vaishnavas, especially the followers of Sri Vedanta Deshika, who are in the northern, what's called the northern branch of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Varagalai. So he composed 1,008 shlokas on the glory of what? Of the lotus feet. No. And on the glory, it's called Sri Paduka Sahasram. on the glories of the sandals of the Lord, the wooden sandals of the Lord, which are a decoration of it. They appear to support him, although he's supporting the whole universe. They support his transcendental forms. He supports everything, and they're a decoration for his feet. So Vedanta Deshika at Sri Rangam within two hours, 24 minutes, two yamas of the night, early morning. He just composed on the spot, glorifying the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. It's glorifying the Lord of Sri Rangam, Ranganatha Swami, but it's understood indirectly it's referring to Lord Rama. Because when we go to Sri Rangam, we're so fortunate we can take darshan, we can see that his padukas are there, but practically he's lying down, and you don't lie down with shoes on. So he's wearing these padukas. And this Sri Paduka Sahasram, it's one in the very rich literary treasure chest of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. There's so many glorious compositions. This is considered among, this is one of the topmost jewels in that treasure chest in terms of its the beauty of its composition, its philosophical and theological import. Now, in one yama of a night, sorry, that's what, two dandas. There are two stories of how it came about. That there was one Vaishnava who was a little puffed up, and this Vaishnava was interested to show off his great scholarly abilities. So he challenged Vedanta Deshika and said, whoever can complete 1,000 shlokas on any subject of his choice in all one night, within one night, can take the title of Mahakavi. And Vedanta Deshika, he wasn't interested in getting in a competition with anyone or getting any title. But he took this and said, okay, I'll take this as an inspiration from the Lord to glorify him. And then, as I've heard the story, it was suggested to him he could glorify the lotus feet of Sri Ranganatha Swami. But he said, that's a bit high for me. I'll go down a little bit to his sandals. And then, what to speak of one night, the competitor, I will write on the feet of the Lord. And then Vedanta Deshika said, well, that's a very high topic for me. Although he's the greatest among the very great greats of devotees. So he said, I'll go down a bit to the feet. So just in that one yama, 2 hours, 24 minutes, Vedanta Deshika composed 1,008 verses, whereas the other, he got through 300 verses in the whole night. And then in the next morning, Vedanta Deshika, he offered his literary contribution, offering back to he who had inspired within the heart, Ranganatha Paduka Sahasram. And that's one story. And another angle on this is that Vedanta Deshika was approached by a group of scholars in Sri Rangam, and they asked him to compose some verses. in praise of he who gave them so much inspiration, Namalva. Because what was going on, Vedanta Deshika had come from Kanchi, which is this. Nowadays we speak of a division of the Sri Vaishnavas. In that day, in those days, that wasn't there, but still, Vedanta Deshika in Kanchi was mostly engaged in. A lot of his energy went in composing polemic works in Sanskrit, whereas in Sri Rangam there's a lot of emphasis, more emphasis on the Divya Prabandham of Namalva. So they wanted him, Vedanta Deshika, to utilize his tremendous literary skills to write in glorification of Namalva. So Vedanta Deshika did. He glorified the Supreme Lord by glorifying his paduka, his sandals, but at the same time he specified that the sandals of the Lord are Namalva. Namalva is a human form of the sandals of the Lord, which he pointed out in that prayer. And therefore, when we go to the temples and the Ramanuja Sampradaya, we'll find there's it looks like a little crown that's put on our head, and the sandals of the Lord are there. So in this way we get the blessings of the Lord by putting that on our head. Now, going from Vaikuntha to Vrindavan, I'm going to read, and it's quite a few verses, and quite a few verses in English, from Govinda Lila Amrita of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, on the glories of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. It's a bit off topic, but it's a very nice topic. So let's read about it. I just thought I'd just squeeze it in there somewhere in one of my talks. So it's nice to share. It's nice to share. So all right, I'll read it. English translation. All glories to Sri Krishna's lotus feet, which are marked with the signs of the disc, half moon, barleycorn, eight-pointed star, water pot, parasol, umbrella, triangle, sky, bow, swastika, thunderbolt, cow's hoofprint, conch shell, fish, a line going up. This everyone has on their foot, mostly. People have a line like that. Krishna has also. But not everyone has all these other symbols. Other symbols are the rod, the ankush, the rod for controlling elephants, a lotus flower, a flag, and a ripe ambu feet. Taken together, these transcendental markings indicate the bearer to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Continuing the reading of the translation. By hearing the description of Sri Krishna's lotus feet, one loses the thirst to attain anything else. By meditating on Sri Krishna's lotus feet, one becomes free from all calamities and attains transcendental good fortune. By seeing Sri Krishna's beautiful lotus feet, one becomes filled with wonder and all his senses become delighted. By touching Sri Krishna's lotus feet, one becomes free from all fatigue and full of transcendental bliss. I pray that all my aspirations may become fixed on Sri Krishna's lotus feet. Tava charane pranata vayam. For instance, again, up in the very high levels, this is from the Gita Govinda of Jaidev Goswami. He says, praying to Krishna that we offer our pranat, a bowed down obeisance at your feet. So, back to Govinda Lilamrita. Simply by meditating on Lord Krishna's lotus feet, one attains good fortune, transcendental beauty, spiritual virtues, and spiritual and material wealth. We pray that these lotus feet of Sri Krishna, which are the abode of innumerable transcendental pastimes, may become the be-all and end-all of our life. By worshipping Sri Krishna's lotus feet, rocks become Chintamani jewels. That's the secret. Cows become Kamadhenu cows, and trees become Kalpavriksha trees, which fulfill all the desires of those who approach them. So there you go. Why is it that the rocks in Vrindavan are Chintamani stones? Why is it that trees are Kalpavriksha trees? Why is it that the cows are Kamadhenu cows? Because they worship Krishna's lotus feet. In the same way, if a human in this world worships Krishna's lotus feet, he becomes a Vaishnav, and then we offer our obeisance. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. A Vaishnav is like a wish-fulfilling tree, can fulfill the desires of everyone. Vaishnav becomes imbued with such power to distribute his magnanimity by worshipping the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami continues, who would not take shelter of Sri Krishna's lotus feet, which are generously offered to those who will accept them? Yeah, Krishna comes to this world. I'm here, you want to take me? Little condition, savadhaman paritya mamekam sharanam rajab. He's there, he's offering. The lotus flower of Lord Giridhari's feet has scented all the worlds with its fragrance. So when you smell beautiful flowers, there's the Bokul, Maliga, that's Tamil, Malika, Mogra, Champa, this beautiful smell. That is derived from the scent of Krishna's lotus feet. The lotus flower of Lord Girishari's feet has scented all the worlds with its fragrance and delighted the bumblebee devotees, expert at relishing transcendental mellows with its sweet nectar. What person expert at relishing transcendental mellows is able to give up that lotus flower? I worship the cooling lotus flower, which is Lord Krishna's feet. You see, that's what lotus feet. Just like the lotus flower, very cooling and pleasing to see. The filaments of that lotus flower are the Lord's toenails, and that lotus has made all directions fragrant with its sweet aroma. Of course, the lotus flowers that we find in this world, at least at the present time, they're not scented, or maybe some very faint scent. They're not famous as... They're famous for being very beautiful to see, but no particular scent. But Krishna's lotus feet are delightfully odoriferous. What person expert at relishing transcendental mellows? Oh, where we are. Yeah. So that lotus flower of Krishna's lotus feet is filled with the sweet honey of the Lord's beauty. That honey is drunk by the bumblebees, which are the eyes of the youthful gopis. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are more pleasing and delightful to the senses than the red lotus flowers. With their generosity and other virtues, Lord Hari's lotus feet have defeated the blossoming twigs of the Kalpavriksha trees. To what may Lord Hari's lotus feet be compared? The splendid Ganga river of Lord Krishna's toenails, the charmingly blackish Yamuna River of the upper part of Lord Krishna's feet. Remember, one name for Yamuna is Krishna because she's blackish. So the upper part of his feet is blackish, just like the Yamuna River. And the reddish Sarasvati River of Lord Krishna's souls all meet at the sacred Prayag Tirtha known as Lord Krishna's feet. This sacred place known as Triveni fulfills all the desires of everyone. Seeing the splendid glory of Lord Krishna's feet, the demigod Aruna, who presides over the sunrise, engaged in a contest to establish his own superiority, but was defeated and cast down into darkness. Seeing Aruna's defeat, the moon became frightened, and to save himself, he surrendered to the military divisions known as Lord Krishna's toenails. So it's very poetic, metaphorical language. The idea is that the moon has become afraid by the defeat of the Aruna, the pre-dawn redness, and has therefore surrendered himself to Krishna so as not to be defeated. And the beauty of the moon is incorporated into the toenails of Krishna's lotus feet. That's the metaphorical language. Vrindadevi then glanced at the female parrot, indicating that she should also say something. Because what's happening, we have the Shuk Shari Sangvad in Govinda Lilamrita, discussion between the parrot and the female parrot. And the male parrot glorifies Krishna, and the female parrot glorifies Radha. And they have a competition to see who's best. And all orchestrated, everything, Vrindavan. It's called Vrindavan. One reason is called Vrindavan. It's the forest, which is, everything there is orchestrated by Vrindadevi, who organizes the pastimes of the Lord. So now she, Vrindadevi, who had told the male parrot, the Shuka, to glorify Krishna, now she's going to tell the female parrot, now maybe she's going to have to speak something about Radha. But no, this time she tells, Vrindadevi glances at the female parrot, and the female parrot, filling her tongue with the sweet aroma of the descriptions of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the parrot, Kalukti, spoke the following words. She's going to glorify Krishna. Some poets explain the reddish color of Lord Krishna's souls in the following way. Aruna, the reddish complexion demigod of the sunrise, scorched by the fierce rays of the sun, took shelter of the cooling shade of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Because of his presence there, Lord Krishna's souls are reddish. Okay, there's a reason why they're red. But the parrot, Mrs. Parrot, says, I differ with them. My explanation follows. Full of passionate love for Lord Krishna, Srimati Radharani thinks within her mind, Krishna's lotus feet are my only shelter. The effulgence of her passionate love, the red blazing fire of her love, is the origin of the reddish luster on Krishna's souls. So there you go. The souls on Krishna's lotus feet. Well, maybe it's true that Aruna took shelter there, but there's a much more powerful reason that's the love of the blazing Udipta, blazing fire of Radha's love. The essence of that is captured in the reddish luster on Krishna, the soles of Krishna's feet. Continuing the reading, the lotus-eyed gopis hold in their lotus hands the toy lotus flower of Lord Krishna's feet. They hold in the golden vases of their breasts the Ashoka flower of Lord Krishna's feet. The red lotus flower of Lord Krishna's feet grows in the lake of their hearts. Let me glorify these lotus feet of the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are more fragrant and cooling than the moon, lotus flower, sandalwood, camphor, or the ushira root. Srimati Radharani, caresses those lotus feet with her hands and yearns to place them on her breasts. Those charming lotus feet are anointed by the kumkum powder worn by Srimati Radharani. There's another reason why they're red. Red kumkum powder of Radha goes on Krishna's feet. And they, the feet, are the abode of all beauty and playfulness. We pray that we may be allowed to continually massage these lotus feet. Speaking in this way, the two parrots fill the ears of the gopis with nectar. In compliance with Srimati Radharani's order, the two parrots proceeded to describe the other limbs of Lord Krishna's transcendental body. And it goes on, whole chapter describing the glories of different parts of the form of the Lord, starting at the feet. I'm going to read from the purport given in the BBT edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 11, Chapter 2, Text 54, commenting on the word Uru Vikramangri. Angri means feet. Vikram means powerful, performing great deeds, and Uru means highly. So, commenting on this, the word Uru Vikramangri indicates that the Lord's lotus feet are quite heroic. Sri Krishna is famous for his incarnation as Vamana, the dwarf Brahmana, who extended his beautiful toes up to the outer limits of the universe and perforated the universal shell, thus bringing the waters of the holy Ganga into the universe. Similarly, when Krishna was entering the city of Mathura to challenge the demoniac King Kamsa, and his entrance was impeded by a ferocious elephant named Kuvalayapira, Lord Krishna kicked the elephant to death and peacefully entered the city gates. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are so exalted that the Vedic literatures state that the entire material manifestation rests beneath his lotus feet. Samashritaye pada pallava plavang mahatpadang punya yasho murarehe. Well-known quote. Now, getting back to the name Ekapat, one leg. Satyasandha Yati Raj, a more recent commentator, he looks at the name in this way. Ekapo plus at, using the root at. Satatyagamane, to go constantly. So his interpretation is that he is constantly on the lookout for us as our soul protector. So there's another meaning. And I won't get into it in great detail, how he's our soul protector. Rakshishyatiti Vishvaso, part of the mindset of surrendering to Krishna, seeing Krishna as our soul protector. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Rakshama, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshama. Krishna is our soul protector. Let us take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, the lotus feet of Krishna, who is known as Ekapat, one-footed. He's also very well known as two-footed. We have in all our temples, all the Radha Krishna temples of ISKCON all over the world and Radha Krishna temples everywhere. Krishna, we always see him standing in that, at least his feet are in that pose with one foot just folded over the other. And it's a very good meditation. When you lie down at night to go to sleep, it's very nice. You can just meditate on the lotus feet of Krishna, how one foot is just crossed over the other very beautifully, very stylishly. All glories to Lord Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who's given us Krishna. All glories to Bhishma Dev, who's given us Vishnu Sahasranam, and all the commentators, and all the Vaishnavas. Let us offer our respectful obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. Ananta koti Vaishnava vrinda ki jai. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nithaya chunakang padaya nipatya kritvacha kakushatameta raham ravimi. Hey sadhava sakala evavyahaya durat goranga chandra charane kurutanuraga. Parivadatu jano yatatatava nanu mukaro navayang vicharayamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata puvi vilotama nartama nirvishama. Oh, I'm going to add something to that. It's never over, is it? If we think of someone as one-legged in this world, we think, oh, very unfortunate, he lost one leg. Yes, Krishna is one-legged, but he's not a cripple. He's one-legged, he's two-legged, he's three-legged. Sarvata parnipadam tat sarvatokshi shiromukham. His limbs are everywhere. In one sense, every limb of every person is his limb in as much as he is upadrashtanumanta. He is the overseer and the allower. So the very fact that we can move our legs, the Olympic Games, running very fast, the very fact that we can put one leg in front of the other is by the power he has given. They have Paralympics. I don't know if they have Paralympics. I don't know if they have people on crutches having a race. I don't know. The whole thing seems... shouldn't say it is not politically correct, but it all seems a little bizarre to me. But so do the regular Olympics seem a bit bizarre, but I guess it's better than chucking bombs on each other and beating each other up. Anyway, we don't have anything to do with the Olympics. We'll run in the forests of Vrindavan, chasing after Krishna. That we want. Who is the fastest? Who is the quickest to reach Krishna? Run on your two legs to reach Krishna, if one is so fortunate. Kṛta punya punjaha, if one has got so much piety, one can go running after Krishna, and then what's the use of running after an Olympic gold medal? So, all glories to the one-legged Lord, Hare Krishna.